Welcome back to Our Soul, a podcast by Faith Choice Ohio, Ohio's faith voice for choice.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Soul. My name is the Reverend Terry Williams, and I am so excited today to be joined by a very special guest, Siobhan Boyd Nelson. Siobhan currently serves as the Interim Executive Director for Equality Ohio, and has earned a BA in communication from Howard University, as well as a JD from the Ohio State University Moritz College of Law. Siobhan's work with Equality Ohio has been nothing short of remarkable. In many different facets and many different settings and roles, Siobhan has brought just a tremendous work into this community and into that organization. And we're so glad to have you with us today, Siobhan. Siobhan, can you just give our listeners a little bit of a heads up of where you are in this work and what Equality Ohio is really doing right now in the midst of all that is 2024?
Of course. Thank you, Terry, so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Siobhan. I use she, her pronouns. I have been in the, I would say, LGBT movement work of some sort for the past 15 years, maybe a little bit longer, maybe 20 years. I don't want to date myself too badly there. But I've worked with a number of organizations, both as a board member and a staff member, just to do the work of finding equality and liberation for LGBTQ Ohioans, and even more specifically, those who sit at the intersection of LGBTQ identity and Black identity, recognizing really what intersectionality is, what it means, and the impact that it has on our lives, whether we're dealing with the legal system or employment or housing or just out in society. And so my work at Equality Ohio, I started there in 2018, and I've been able to hold a number of different roles there. But I think really the work of Equality Ohio has been to create a sense of everyone has a place in this process, in this fight for equality. We always say legal and lived equality, and legal equality sounds super formal. It's the words on paper, it's non-discrimination laws and positive policies for the LGBTQ community. But words on paper are just that. You know, it takes a lot of time to get a law passed. We all know, you know, there's a lot of hoops to jump through, a lot of things that we can't control when it comes to legal equality. But then there's also lived equality. And that's the part we do get to control. That's the part that gets me really excited. That's the part where I am treated as a valued member of my community. I can walk out of my house and walk around with my family, both blood family and chosen family. I can live my life and do so with dignity and feel respected and feel like I'm welcome and I belong in the place that I have chosen to call home. That's the lived equality, and that's the part that we all get to have a hand in. Every single day we get to be building that and making sure that that exists not only for ourselves but for others.
That is just fantastic. You know, I usually, when we welcome guests to the show, we usually take time to talk about in depth what the organization does and what the organization is. And I just kind of jumped right in because most of our listeners know Equality Ohio, because Equality Ohio shows up for so many different communities in our region, and particularly for repro rights. Your description of intersectionality is just spot on with the work that we do in this space. And I want to kind of explore a little bit of what you shared around lived equality, because one of the statements that we often utilize here on Our Soul, we talk about reproductive justice and reproductive justice frameworks. And for us, we utilize the definition of reproductive justice from an organization called Sister Song, that is the ability to have children, the ability to not have children, and the ability to parent the children we do have in safe and sustainable communities. Yeah. All of that revolves around that bodily autonomy function, which is like lived equality for repro, right? That
Yes,
it's
yes.
that not on paper, but in flesh too, how we are able to be who we are.
Right.
I'm interested to know, in your experience of this region and of your organization, how have those intersections between the broad work of EO, Equality Ohio, and Repro, how have you noticed them bubbling up and making connections?
You know, it's interesting because I've actually seen the connection grow. I've seen the partnership between the LGBTQ plus movement and the Repro Justice movement has only gotten stronger over the years. And that's something that I think is so integral to our shared liberation. We have to be doing this work together, and we have to see that overlap and kind of exploit it to our benefit. But I think that Repro Justice really gets to the core of what it means to be a person, and to really embody one's own body and make choices for one's own life. And, you know, whether or not to become a parent is such, as my grandmother would say, it's more than a notion. That's how she described anything that was a big deal. It is more than a notion. And I say that as someone who is a parent, who is parenting a 20-year-old. And that was, you know, that decision to become a parent was a very scary time for me. And it causes you to think a lot about yourself and who you are as a person, and what you believe about yourself. And I'll actually share with you here, Terry, that it was the process of becoming a parent that actually pushed me out of the closet. So for me, the two are very intrinsically connected. And that is because, you know, I had an unplanned pregnancy. I was in the midst of law school, you know, hint for anyone out there considering law school or parenting, I don't recommend doing them together. They're both great. I just don't recommend doing them at the exact same time. And yet I did. I did choose to become a parent. And once I had made that choice, I recognized that I was now tasked with raising a person who was going to be a good citizen of the world. And I felt a lot of responsibility in that. And I said to myself, well, how can I make sure this person's a good citizen of the world? And for me, that was, this person knows themselves, and this person tells the truth about themselves and can live authentically. And then I had to, you know, that was a big mirror on me, because I was not fully out. I was not living authentically. I had gone back in the closet when I came back to Columbus for law school. And I said, you know, I cannot raise another person and try to teach them autonomy and authenticity when I'm not living with authenticity. I first have to be that person before I can model that behavior. And that's really what pushed me out of the closet, because I knew that I needed to be living my full life, my authentic life. And then that goes even further into the raising of my child. One of the really big things that we talked about a lot was bodily autonomy, knowing yourself, being the ruler of their own flesh and blood. But it also backfired. I'm very proud of myself for being a parent who introduced the concept of consent pretty early in my son's life, around the age of probably 10 or so, and maybe even earlier. And then by the age of, I think, 12, I was being told that he did not consent to my touching, meaning I was no longer allowed to hug without permission. So, you know, there's a give and a take there, right? But, you know, that really got, that message got in there, though, got in there. And I could say to myself, okay, this kid knows who he is. This kid knows, you know, that he has control over his own body, and he is willing to say that to anyone and everyone, including his own mother.
When we do our whole lives, curriculum is a comprehensive sexuality curriculum that many of us in Faith Choice Ohio's network are trained in. And when we do the bodily autonomy sections, particularly with first and second graders, we have to warn the parents ahead of time. We're like, just FYI, like, if you want your children to really get these lessons, you're gonna have to respect when they decide to exercise that choice. And it's always fascinating because parents are like, yeah. And then they get the response from their child that says, well, I don't consent to that. And it is that, I love the phrase you used, holding the mirror up moment of, oh yeah, this is what we claim, and now this is what we're going to live into. My colleague, Kelly Fox, who is not with us today, loves a phrase called Afrofuturism. And she describes herself often as an Afrofuturist because it's that moment of like looking into the future and saying, this is what I want us to be like and me to be like. And so now I'm going to embody that. And I find that kind of bubbling up in this description that you've shared, that seems to be a big part of your story of being able to say, yes, this is the future and the flourishing. And by the way, that's for me too. I am going to live into that, and I'm going to enjoy that and embody that in this moment. I just, my heart is so full because for so much of the work that both of our organizations do, and particularly the places where our organizations intersect in our work, there is not often that hopeful vision in this state. I don't have to tell you, and I certainly don't have to tell any of our regular listeners what a mess the legal equality is in this state. Not only for repro, but for LGBTQ plus folks, it can be kind of a difficult task to have that positive futurism. How do you maintain that hopeful perspective? What grounds you in hope as you look to the future for issues not only of repro, but of equality for LGBTQ folks?
Honestly, the past is what I look to. Is it's often I love history. I'm by no means a student of history, but I love a podcast and I love a history podcast. And so I am very interested in stories that we aren't told. Those smaller pieces of history that but really kind of show you human nature and society. And I think these, I love stories that show us the actual progress that our society has made, and it puts today in context. So to me, I can't imagine a future unless I've put today into context. And in order to put today into context, I have to know my history. I have to know the past. And so for me, that is knowing my history as a Black woman. That is dipping definitely back into the stories of my mother and my grandmothers and great grandmothers, and looking at the world that they faced, and knowing their laughter, right? I know the world that my grandmothers and my mother have faced in this country, and I can hear their laughter and see their smiles. And in many instances, like with my granny Sarah, would loved a party, loved having a good time, loved meeting up with family. And so the fact that they were able to hold on to joy is really what inspires me, to hold on to my joy, and I get inspiration from them. And then my LGBTQ history, that is one of the things that I think, when I think about my intersectionality, when I think about being a Black person, a woman, and someone who is LGBTQ, my female ancestors can teach me history and I can learn from them. My Black ancestors can teach me history and I can learn from them. And I've been doing that since I was a child. But my queer ancestors, where are they to teach me the history? And I'm not saying they're not out there in the community, but that's not something that I was given access to from an early age. And so I feel like it is my duty, it is my role, it is my work, and part of my work and part of my job to know my history, to know the history of the community that I am seeking to serve, because it is in these moments that feel so difficult, that feel like we're in this continuous mode of crisis, that I can look back and I can say, I can actually point to situations and say, yes, this is today's situation, and I know that we have been in similar situations. We have faced difficulties, and we have overcome. I know we have overcome because we are here to say it. And that just really helps and keeps me going and keeps me inspired for the next battle.
That is profound. And I think the concept of grounding ourselves in this moment, your phrase, you said, I can't imagine a future if I don't put today in context. I see so often the reality of today that is so out of context for folks, that it is, it is seen as such a unique and traumatizing experience that particularly folks who don't have, you know, the benefit of either their own long history or a community that carries a history with it.
Right.
Those folk tend to struggle to understand the existential reality of, you know, these constant onslaughts against, you know, trans folk in particular in the last, you know, few cycles here in our state house, against people's bodily autonomy around abortion access and access to just basic medical care. When you take just one piece of it, one thread of it, it doesn't make sense when you don't see the whole tapestry, right?
That's right.
In so many ways, we see the work that's going on right now in this state as everything's on fire, right? I mean, there's just, it's constant. It's this, you know, never-ending crisis that we are existing in. What are some of the main transitions you've seen within Equality Ohio and the work that you do in that time?
Well, you know, I think the biggest transition is just the basis of our work. So Equality Ohio, we work in a way that we call inside game. So, you know, within a movement ecology or ecosystem, there are a number of ways of doing the work. You can work from the inside of the system, you can work outside the system, and you can create alternative systems. And Equality Ohio has chosen to work inside the system. So we are inside game folks. And we made that decision at a time when Ohio was a deeply purple state, when our legislature was not as horribly gerrymandered, when we did not have a supermajority of one party in both chambers, as well as a single party in all executive offices. So it was, a very different context for doing the work. And within that context of the past, and I'm thinking all the way back to 2005 when EO was founded, you know, for the first 15 years of Equality Ohio's existence, that state house is a place that we could count on to be reasonable. We could count on there being a certain number of reasonable minds. That even if they weren't champions or advocates or even allies, they were willing to sit down and have a conversation and to find points of mutual agreement, that there were values that we shared, just as, you know, Ohioans who want the best for our communities and love our state. That has changed, unfortunately, over, you know, the past 4 years. What we are seeing now is, like I said, a supermajority in both chambers, and the a lack of the fewer and fewer reasonable minds who are willing to sit down and have a conversation with us. And that's not Equality Ohio's doing. We are still the same folks who will bake banana bread and bring it to a meeting. That is a true story. We bake banana bread. And even when we have to eat the banana bread first, because folks are scared to eat the banana bread that we baked at the meeting. You know, we are those folks because we understand that, and let me be very clear, those aren't always fun meetings. These are not situations that most of us would choose to be in. They're not situations that I don't think EO would ask most of our community members to walk mm-hmm. into, because it is emotional and intellectual labor that it takes to walk into those meetings. And sometimes you have to bite your tongue or swallow a comment or not be as adamant as you would be about something because you are trying to move a conversation forward and keep a door open for future conversations. Unfortunately, those doors aren't as wide open. Those conversations aren't as fruitful. And where we have been able to prevent bad legislation from even being proposed in the past, we have actually seen bad legislation pass. I mean, and that's a big change in just 4 years from where we are literally saying, please don't even introduce the bill and getting it to stop there to where it actually passes.
And I just want to echo that experience of this hyperpolarization of our representative branch of government, as well as the executive, that has accompanied a not polarization in terms of numbers of our population. Our population has stayed pretty well the same, if not a little more towards our side on some of these social issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about, you know, you mentioned the founding of Equality Ohio, and you start, some of us who are old people, right, start thinking back, not you, but me, I will say, I start thinking back to, like, some of the old speakers of the House, right? I mean, we used to have, like, Bill Batchelder, right, an alum of my alma mater, Ohio Wesleyan University. Not a person in a very progressive lane of thinking around repro or human sexuality or gender identity or any of the issues that we are passionate about in this space. Mm-hmm. But he was a reasonable person that could sit down and have the conversation and was willing to hear the argument that maybe it's not healthy to wedge this issue into a bill to try to harm other folks. Maybe the political gamesmanship actually isn't okay when it starts harming people's families, right? And that kind of thinking is not, it's almost not electable anymore in the supermajority, because the supermajority has used the machinations of the system to create a chamber that doesn't have to be accountable to the will of the people.
And they're really just accountable to the fringes, right? Because of the primary system and what we just saw last week with our primary. And we saw some folks, you know, a previous sponsor of the Ohio Fairness Act was primaried out of his seat. And that's very, very unfortunate that we are again a wedge issue. You know, if there was a time there, you know, we've been a wedge issue, you know, and we're back to where we were. Yeah. And but then again, that's why I go back to that history. It's like, okay, we are back as a wedge issue. So what do we do? What have we learned from when we were a wedge issue previously? And how can we take those lessons and put them to use now so that they're not as successful? I know that we want to win, and I know what we actually don't want to win. We want to be free. We want to be alive. We want to just, I say that a lot, that one of the reasons why this can be difficult work is because we're playing two different games. One side is trying to win and the other side is trying to stay alive. And so there's very different types of moves that are available to you on the board when you have those different types of objectives. But really, we have to take that gamesmanship out of our policy making systems. Like, that's what the legislature is. It is supposed to be a policy making body for the good of the people. And right now it is simply a body of place of people who get elected. And that is the only point of it, is to get elected and stay elected in order to do more blocking of policymaking than actual policymaking. And we really need to get back to the point where that body is in a place where we can hold them accountable for the policymaking that they were hired and elected to do.
Yes, yes. And I just want to lift up the wedge issue politics of whether it's repro, whether it's LGBTQ rights, whether it's bathroom bills. What I mean, just pick whatever issue. Those issues are wedge issues for a very small sliver of people who are in control via the primary system and gerrymandering of some of these legislative seats. We saw last year the real wedge position in Ohio around repro is the other side of the issue, because a supermajority of Ohioans agree that we need to have protections for health and safety and repro in the Constitution. Vast majorities of people agree that despite the gerrymandering that's going on, our state is still unified on these issues. I'm interested to know, we have a few minutes left in this space because we are such a concentrated form of dialogue. I'm interested to know, what do you see as the transition? Because I feel like the inside game folks in many ways have been squished out, like a tube of toothpaste getting stomped on by an elephant. Intentional imagery there, but you know what I mean, right? So what does it look like when the inside folks are no longer allowed to do their best work inside? What does it look like to be the inside gone out in, whether it's Equality Ohio or any other organization, that now just has to live in a space where this side of the question is really trying to live and not win, just live and live free in flourishing? What does that look like? Is it rebirth and transformation? Is it, you know, we're here until we can get back there? What does that new future look like to you?
Yeah, well, let's just say, first of all, there is a future. EO isn't going anywhere. We actually thought about this, but I think in a much more positive way years ago when we opened up the legal clinic, because really in our thinking was, oh gosh, it was great thinking back in 2018 when we were dreaming of and planning for the legal clinic was, well, what happens when the Ohio Fairness Act passes, right? What happens when we get all of the good policies? Clearly, we're not there anymore, but in preparing for that wonderful outcome, we're actually ready in this instance too, because that means that, you know, we've got a legal clinic and it is helping people and it is, you know, doing a lot of work with our trans and non-binary community, working with name and gender marker changes. We still have the Adelaide case pending before the Ohio Supreme Court with respect to changing the marker on your birth certificate if you're born here in Ohio. So all of that work continues, and lots of good work on the league. I just want to shout them out because they are actually helping everyday Ohioans. They help over, I believe, 200 to 300 Ohioans every year, and they provide full legal representation. And they're doing things like making sure that people get divorced. They're getting rid of bad debt. They're getting debt that should have been paid, you know, for past benefits, things like that. So those are the things that allow people to continue to thrive, even as we wait for, you know, that particular inside game to come back around, because it is going to come back around. Let me say that too. That inside game is going to come back around. Yes. Why? Because our movement, and when I say, I want to say our movements, we are working together. I want to shout that out again. We are working together to create the context and the situation and the, where we can actually do that inside game again, right? So that's another thing. We and our partners like Faith Choice Ohio and lots of other great folks are working to be sure that we are a gerrymandered legislature, that we don't have these super majorities that are there because a minority of Ohioans elected them, right? So that we can make sure that we can play that inside game. And then the final thing I would say is just that there's a lot of insides. There's the State House, and we're always thinking about the State House, but that's not the only place where we make policy. Mm-hmm. We make policy at so many different levels, at the national level as well as at the local level. And so we have always been working at the local level to create better and stronger local protections because there was not a statewide non-discrimination law. And that work continues and is continuing in earnest. We just saw, and it's new work, actually. I think that I want to shout out the municipalities that are stepping in where our State House has let us down. Mm. And they are being creative and working with us and local organizations to find new ways to create good policies to protect LGBTQ Ohioans. For example, the City of Columbus just announced a $60,000 investment in a training program that NASW Ohio and Kaleidoscope Youth Center are developing to train social workers and counselors on how to deal with HB 68, yes. Right? So they yes. are, right, yeah. And so we don't, this isn't a single issue fight. There isn't any one way to fight, to do the work, and there isn't any one place where the fight is happening. And I say that to say there is work here for everybody, no matter who you are or what you do or where in the movement ecosystem you find yourself or you feel most comfortable. There is a spot for you. There is a place for you, and there is something that you can be doing to lend to this movement, even if it's something as small as having a one-on-one conversation with someone and trying to change a single heart or mind. That is the work.
Siobhan Boyd Nelson, I'm telling you, I feel like I've gone to church. I heard the altar call. I heard the call to action in this moment. Thank you so much for your presence Absolutely. In this space and your hope and your vision. It has really been a pleasure to be with you.
It has been such a pleasure to be with you here, Terry. We don't get to spend enough time together, but thank That's you great. For everything you're doing. Thank you to Faith Choice Ohio. It's wonderful to have organizations like this that stand up for queer Christians like me, progressive Christians like mm-hmm. me, who often feel like we don't have a voice or that we're people are misspeaking and misrepresenting us. So I really appreciate your presence and what you do and making me feel like I'm seen out here in the community.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Our Soul. If you'd like to hear more of our conversations on religion, abortion access, and all things repro, you can find all our episodes on Podbean, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. For more content, training, and other information, check us out at faithchoiceohio.org.